Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark amove.tv for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. Greetings, and welcome back, everyone, to Into the Nexus, the podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. I'm Garrett Weinzerl. He's Jeff Cannata.
Hey!
We will be holding down the fort this week as Mr. Kyle Ferguson is enjoying a much-earned vacation with his family.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you know where he went?
Actually, he came down to America's Wiener, also known as Florida, jumped on a cruise ship, and is, I'm assuming, somewhere in the Caribbean right now.
Good for him.
Good for
him.
Get
away. Get on that cruise. Let it happen. Enjoy life.
We had entertained the thought of jumping in our car and racing ahead and meeting him in Key West, which was one of the stops. And then we looked at the price of hotels in the southernmost point of the U.S. and decided, sorry, Kyle, maybe we'll see you in downtown Disney when you get off the boat.
It's the thought that counts. You know, it's the thought.
Yeah, exactly. But Jeff, man, I'm so glad that you could join us this week to fill Kyle's shoes.
Oh, I will definitely not be doing that. I will be a sad, pale imitation, a sad replacement. But I shall do my best. I'm excited. I come with enthusiasm, and I come with excitement and joy for this game. Also, I come bearing some news.
Oh, yes, I hear that you've got an inside scoop that you're not going to share with us, obviously. But you're also
I'm contractually not allowed to share any details, but I can tell you I will be hosting/moderating the Heroes of the Storm panel at PAX East on April 5th. It's the first day of PAX East. It's on Thursday. And I have seen the sights of what will be announced, and I can tell you, if you're going to PAX East, you do not want to miss this panel. It is going to be awesome. I think it is BlizzCon level announcements that they're doing at PAX East. I hope to come back on this show very shortly after and talk all about it, because I know it'll be playable. Stuff will be playable there. And I think you guys are going to lose your minds over the stuff that they're announcing, because I lost my mind when they told me. So I'm very excited.
That's awesome. So they're prepping you well. You actually know what's coming, and you're just not allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, I signed the NDA, but it's cool. There's going to be several members of the team there, and there's some really cool announcements, more than one announcement, and it's pretty awesome.
That's sweet, man. That's sweet. I got to do my first official Blizzard thing at BlizzCon last year, which was that panel, and I didn't really know what was happening until the rehearsal.
Oh, wow. That's intense.
Yeah. I mean, I had a basic prompter of, you're going to talk about making content around Blizzard games. And that was turned out to be very accurate. But as it was my first time ever making an appearance at BlizzCon in an official regard, I was on an Overwatch thing in the Dark Moon Fair the year before. But it was the Dark Moon Fair. It was a new thing they were doing that year. So it was very casual. Whereas this year I'm like, oh wait, I'm on a stage and there's going to be lights and it's going to be on the stream and DirecTV. Wait, what?
Yeah.
So I started freaking out. Of course, I wanted all the details. So there's some inside baseball for you folks about signing up to do things for Blizzard. It was really cool though.
Yeah, they're an awesome company to work for, and I'm just so delighted that they thought of me. And it's not going to be about me. It's going to be about the game and the team. And I think it's going to be well worth seeing. I think they're streaming it. So if you're not able to come to PAX East, I think you can still watch it. But I don't quote me on that because I'm not 100% sure. But it's going to be one that I think is going to be real exciting to fans of the game.
It would make sense. PAX East has become a solid place for Blizzard announcements. I mean, that's where they announced Hearthstone. Ever.
Is that so? I didn't remember that, but that does make sense. That's crazy. Yeah.
Unless I'm getting my packs mixed up, but I'm 90% sure that PAX East was where they announced Hearthstone, because I still remember sitting there being like, oh, Because I'm like, oh, Blizzard has an announcement. Oh my God, Blizzard never has announcements of a new game. And it turned out to be a card game. And I was super cynical. I'm like, oh, the makers of World of Warcraft, how the mighty have fallen. Totally wrong, by the way.
Magic the Gathering? Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Knew. That'll never turn into anything. It certainly will not turn into the cornerstone of my career as I age into adulthood.
Right. Blizzard doing side projects? Okay, I guess.
Yeah.
Who knew?
I was like, wow, we got a picture of Mike Morhaime in jean shorts playing Magic on the floor. I guess that was worth the price of admission. Turns out the game is pretty good. It makes a lot of money for the company, folks.
Yeah.
Turns out.
It's real fun.
Yeah. Yeah, but PAX is, and they've done multiple expansion announcements for Hearthstone over at PAX. I know they've done Heroes stuff. I'm straining to remember specific examples, but yeah, they've really taken a shining to PAX East.
Well, I'll tell you, based on what they're announcing at PAX East, I can't even imagine what they're holding in the chamber for BlizzCon, because I felt like, well, if you had this, wouldn't you just wait and announce it at BlizzCon? But they must have something even better coming for BlizzCon, because you know they plan that stuff out like that. So,
man, if we hadn't had our 200th, I would have been like, dude, it's Blizzard. They just release it when it's ready. They don't actually build things specifically for BlizzCon. But when Jade Martin and Andrew Kinnebrew were here, they were basically like, yeah, no, we definitely have heroes that are specifically BlizzCon heroes that
right.
you know we work on and wait until BlizzCon. But yeah, I mean, I would say overall, most Blizzard games are good about just when it's ready, it goes out there.
Yeah. I think there's got to be some idea. And since they're putting on this conference, BlizzCon, they work towards stuff. They hold things. They want to have big announcements at that show. So I don't think that's a bad thing to think. Oh, you know, it's a place they want to give people their money's worth. So they want to announce cool stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it's a weird like going to see your favorite band. Like, oh, play expansion announcement. That's my favorite.
Yeah, exactly.
No, man. Play new IP. It's the best.
Yeah, I always want them to play new IP, and they so rarely do.
I was there for one of them. It was Overwatch, and the feeling in the room was electric.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. That was the year, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I was also there for Geek Is, which was the opposite. If you ever want to know what the opposite of announcing Overwatch is, it's Chris Metzen, albeit an amazing man, delivering a slideshow, a PowerPoint presentation. Yeah.
It's always fun. I always love BlizzCon. I've been going forever, and it's great. They know how to put on a great show. It's truly enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nuts. I go to a lot of conferences, and people are always like, oh, you know, conferences are fun. You know, how's BlizzCon? I'm like, well, BlizzCon's like its own thing.
It really is.
On its own level of conference. It's so targeted. It's so specific to one thing. Which is it's cool. It's like they built Disneyland and only had it open for 2 days a year.
right near Disneyland, in fact.
As a matter of fact, yes, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. But man, there are so many patches to talk about today, Jeff. That I hope you've got your patch hat on, or at least your patch pants.
Yes, my patch pants have so many patches, and those patches have patches, and which is like the game at this point. Everything's changing, and it feels like for me specifically. The heroes that I decide, okay, that's going to be my next hero, and then they patch it. So I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
I don't think that's an unfair feeling. I think a lot of people feel that way. You know, if you're on the outskirts, if you if you're enthusiastic about the game, but you can't play it every single day to the point of figuring it out for yourself, you need some sort of guiding light, right? You need to look to something as a path to follow. And I think a lot of people look at win rates, a lot of people look at other streamers, a lot of people look at pro players, and you're going to end up on the popular heroes, and eventually the axe comes for all popular heroes.
That's the truth. Yeah, if you're playing the hero that seems to be doing well, Blizzard is noticing.
Indeed. And that's certainly happening this week, but let's get into it. This week's Heroes of the Storm news.
We're on, boys. Let's liven up this place.
Can Stitches play now? Point me to the stage.
Well, I think we should just kick things off with our first impressions of a brand new hero. It's on the PTR right now. You can go and play Phoenix the Dragoon. Right now, if you want to. It's actually been up for a few days. And last week on the show, he had just been announced We didn't even tactically know what role he would be fulfilling. We were pretty sure he'd be an assassin. Right. And now not only do we have his kit, we actually had a chance to play him. Turns out he is an assassin. He is a ranged assassin. And I want to just, I don't even want to start with what he does. I am just really happy the way they animated him. Jeff, did you notice that not when he's in like the hover mount mode, but when he's walking around, his four legs never rotate. They are always oriented north to south. They never move. His head just moves and it makes it look like a dragoon from Brood War. And I love it.
It's so badass. I have to say, my favorite unit from StarCraft back in the day was always the Dragoon. I just love that unit. It wasn't always the best unit to deploy in the game. I just loved how it looked. I loved how it felt. I loved how having a whole bunch of them all shooting their beams or their little orbs at the same time was always fun. So it's so cool to see a Dragoon in this game. And yeah, the way the spider legs all move and the fact that they don't rotate, like you said, it just all looks so good. And it's such a fun feeling hero, which is great.
Yeah, they I think I'm floored. They nailed it out the gate. Like, this comes up every now and then with Kyle and I, and I'm sure it's come up a few times while you've been on the show, but I want more. Like Phoenix is a famous StarCraft hero. Okay, he's a prominent figure in the lore of StarCraft, but I always want just more units. I want, like, let's do what Dota did, which was just squeeze every little ounce of a new game, like unit model out of the sponge that was Warcraft 3 and make it a hero. And I always liked that. Like, I just want a Hydralisk. Just give me a Hydralisk. It doesn't need a name. I don't care. Brightwing is basically just a fairy dragon. They gave it a name. That's cool. And Phoenix is that for me. It's like, yes, I know it's Phoenix technically. I get it. I understand where Phoenix comes from. But it's a Dragoon. It is an honest-to-God Dragoon. It feels like a Protoss unit.
Yeah, it does. And it has all the things you would want from a Dragoon. And it doesn't feel like any other assassin to me. It feels like its own thing, which is really cool. The fact that they're still mining new, interesting mechanics out of basically just dealing as much damage as possible. And he's got, you know, he's got a great trait. I'm just super thrilled with this hero. It just is super fun.
I never get to do this, so I'm going to be insufferable for just a moment, but I totally called it that he has real, honest to God, Protoss shields on last week's episode. Yes, I finally
you did.
Called something.
I remember listening to that. Yeah, and kudos to you. It's an odd thing for an assassin to have, right? Because he's a little tank. He's a little Muradin light, you know, getting hit for a little bit and you recharge.
Part of his health is regeneratable.
Yeah.
If I can make up a word that doesn't leave my mouth easily. yeah, that turns out to be his trait. Yeah, he's got a permanent shield. And if you haven't taken damage for 5 seconds, it starts regenerating.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I feel like it gives him a little bit of survivability, and you can be smart and, you know, pop out and pop back into fights. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And especially because he can literally pop out and pop back into fights.
Yes, yes. He has an ability called Warp, which is not a heroic. It's on a Z. It's a 15-second cooldown where he can just warp to a target location. Granted, based on a range, as you would assume, but it's a pretty sizable range.
Yeah, and it's cool how this warp works. It's not like any of the other teleports. It's not like Zeratul or Li Ming. It actually takes a second, and he doesn't exist in the game for a brief moment.
A quarter of a second. So once you start casting, it takes half a second, and then you arrive after 3/4 of a second. So there is a quarter of a second where you technically don't exist, and that's just
pretty
rad.
Awesome.
I love that.
Yeah, super cool. It gives a very different feel to his teleport than any of the other teleports or blinks in the game.
Yeah, yeah. It's off-putting at first. I was just like, whoa, what is this? And then eventually you just get used to it. But right out the gate, that was probably the thing I found the weirdest or the most unique about him, on top of the fact that I was just sitting there going, oh my God, his legs don't rotate. I'm a nerd.
I mean, I think they nailed look and feel on this character. It's just one of those super satisfying characters. I mean, I won't jump ahead to his ultimates, but both of them are like so satisfyingly displayed. Just the pure animation and the feedback you get from this character are really well done.
Yeah. To me, it's just the flavor overall. I couldn't have ask for a better hero release around the StarCraft 20 celebration, because it just feels like pure original StarCraft to me.
I agree.
Just turned up to 11, obviously, with modern day graphics. But it's great. And I hate to always throw Probius under the bus, but Probius was just so off base from what I would have expected him to be that I'm going to start using Probius and Phoenix as my black and white examples of nailing what I think the unit's fantasy is, and maybe taking a completely different spin on it in the case of Probius.
Well, I'm going to push back on you a little on Probius. I mean, I agree with you that Phoenix feels really right and just feels like a Dragoon. But I kind of buy into the fiction of Heroes of the Storm in the sense that if Probius was going to jump into a fight, you know, if this is little probe that usually just collects minerals and Vespene gas needs to get into a fight in the Nexus, maybe he'd step it up and be a little harder core. You know, like there's this – I don't know. There's this leap that I'm willing to make in my imagination of these units like having to sort of muster the best of themselves. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just giving them too much credit.
No. I think it's fair. There's a lot of Probius lovers out there. I think it's just like the duration of the cannons. I expect him to be a little bit more of a builder and less of like this burst hero. But it's fine. Not every hero has to be for me. They're not making the game for me. They're making the game for everyone.
You wanted him to be a little more Gazlo-y?
I expected him to be 50% Gazlo, 50% Zagara. I was expecting summons. I'm like, he's going to warp in a gateway, and then I'm going to start adding one extra zealot to my minion waves every...
I mean, that would be cool.
And it could still come. Who knows?
Yeah.
They'll just give us the Nexus hero. It will replace the core, and the Nexus will just beam in Protoss structures. It'll be wonderful.
That'd be pretty rad. I'd be into that.
I'm still waiting for the permanent structure replacement hero. but back to Phoenix. The other thing I find remarkably cool about him is his W ability. It's a basic attack toggle is the best way that I can explain it. It starts on repeater cannon, which if you're in this mode, your basic attack speed is increased by 150%. And you need to know that it's a toggle, otherwise you're just like, but that's just the speed. That's just my basic attack all the time. But if you hit that W, it changes. It slows down to just your 100% basic attack speed, and it becomes a slower firing, AoE.
Area attack.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. A splash damage. It also increases the damage of the attack. So you're attacking slower. You're dealing slightly more damage in the chunk. If you're trying to do single target damage, repeater cannon is your way to go. But for lane clear, or if your enemies are bunched up, you're going to want to hit that W, switch it to phase bomb, and enjoy that splash damage.
Is this also got the record for the shortest cooldown on a basic ability in the game?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I think it might. You're making half a second cooldown? That's pretty short.
I think so, maybe. There's probably an argument to be had, but what if there's charges?
Yeah, but if you spend all the charges, then it's on cooldown. This is just straight up half a second cooldown. You can toggle it back and forth. You can actually use it in a really interesting way to, you know, do some single target damage and then do splash damage and then pop back to single target damage. It's a really interesting ability, I think.
Yeah, there's also talents that make you want to do that, because using one empowers the other after you switch.
Right.
It's cool in that way. But let's talk about the heroics. Q. We didn't talk about Plasma Cutter,
which is rad too.
Yeah, I'm like, how many cool ways are there left to make abilities? Turns out many, or they use them all up on Phoenix and we're done. This is the last hero. But you again, there's a max range on it, but wherever your cursor is and you hit Q, that is the distance from the center, which is Phoenix, that a circle is drawn around your hero and a single beam just spins around you multiple times dealing damage. Sorry, twice.
Yeah, twice. And it works like, I don't know, like hands on a clock. It kind of, you know, does the, like a radar or something. And you can move while you're doing it. So you can sort of start that thing up and start moving around and spin your laser around the things around you. It looks really cool. And again, it's so different from anything else in the game. I love the fact that they can find these really new, interesting ways to add abilities.
Yeah, when I first saw the highlight video, I just assumed there was a fixed distance on this ability that you just hit it and it's always the same length. And then when I got into the game and I just clicked and I have quick casting on, it just drew it where my cursor was. I was just like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty flippin' sweet. Chat room, by the way, are saying that a crossfade on Lucio is a lower cooldown.
Oh, right. Dang it. That got me.
That makes sense. Oh, wait, it's the same.
Half a second?
I looked it up. Yeah, it's half a second. So it's tied with crossfade.
That makes sense because it's basically the same kind of thing where it's two different modes toggling back and forth.
Yep. Very true. And then let's get into his heroic ability. So the first one's called Purification Salvo, and it's a 1.5 second channel, and he does a sweeping laser in front of him, almost like he's trying to scan the food at the at the checkout line. He can't quite find it.
Yeah, it's like Terminator when he walks into the bar and sees the guy's faces.
Yeah. So anyway, it says does a sweeping cone in front of itself for 1.5 seconds, and if there are any enemies that are in that cone, enemy heroes, it locks onto them. And then once that channel is done, 5 missiles get shot at each locked hero. So you can do more damage if fewer heroes are locked. And now I just assume McCree is never coming into this game.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
This is High Noon, man. This is
kind of stole his thunder on that one.
Yeah. I saw this. I'm like, oh, so it's like High Noon. Oh, no, McCree.
Huh. I wonder if they could figure out a way to make High Noon still be unique and different. I wouldn't put it past them, but I do love the look of this. I do love the fact that you can, once you scan the targets, it doesn't matter how far away from them you are, your missiles will still reach them. It's awesome. It looks cool. It feels cool. I'm into it.
Yeah. And if that's too subtle for you, don't worry. Phoenix has Planet Cracker as the second option, which is only a half second delay. After that half second delay, you just channel, for my Dragon Ball Z fans out there, a Kamehameha, essentially. it has no maximum range. It fires across the battleground.
Yeah, it is intense. And it has a great sound effect, a great look. It's another one of those things where it's like, you know, it's like this massive beam that comes out. It's Cyclops taking off his glasses. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, except he's not like super emo and depressed about it when he takes his glasses off.
Right. He's pissed. And I, you know, you can always imagine crazy cross map snipes. You know, if you have Viz on somebody and you can target them up and they're low health, you can just.
Or just you really think they're taking the mercs right now.
Yeah.
It's like they're probably there.
It's not one bit of damage. It's you know, it's like Li Ming's disintegrator beam. As long as it's hitting them, it's giving them damage.
Yeah, it's a tick every quarter second.
Yeah.
Starts at 122 damage. It does not hit structures. So right. They've been on a roll lately. Jeff, I don't know how you felt about Maiev or Blaze. Oh, yeah. But they've just been churning out some AAA heroes, in my opinion.
I agree. The level of I think innovation on the heroes is really, really high, and I think that's going to continue. It's pretty awesome to see heroes that make me go, just pure mechanics make me go, oh my God, I want to try that. I want to play that. And again, I will underscore how good it looks and how good it feels. Like they're, as you said, working on all cylinders right now.
Yeah. Well, so that's Phoenix. I gotta say, like, overall, I think he's great. I think he might be a little too strong. Even I'll say that, like, it feels like it might be Maiev all over again. Like he can't make himself invulnerable, but that extra health that can regen is pretty strong. And his abilities seem nasty.
That AoE attack is pretty awesome, and the fact that it is on such a short cooldown as far as being basically your auto attack that is now an AoE, that's pretty rad. And there's a skill where if you stutter step enough, it like adds bonus damage. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's not so. If you haven't tried Phoenix, I highly recommend go give him a shot on the PTR before he goes live. If for no other reason, then it's very likely there could be a patch alongside his release that brings him in line. So,
yeah,
maybe go see what it's like to play the ships from Independence Day as a mobile hero for a little bit. But there's also a PTR patch that affects heroes other than just bringing Phoenix into the world on the PTR right now that have some pretty major changes to Tracer and Varian.
I literally had just gotten into Tracer. I just mastered her.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, just got brought her to level 15. I've been basically maining Tracer for the last 2 weeks. So, you know, you're welcome. This is on me. I made this happen. It's so, like, you know, when you wash your car and then it rains.
So, Jeff, also, it's you live in LA, so it's a really big deal when that happens. your last hero was Malthiel.
Yeah.
They took that away from you.
Yeah.
Now it's Tracer. So, Jeff, just do me a favor. Don't play Sonya. Don't go anywhere near Sonya.
Fair enough.
And we can continue being friends.
Sounds good. I've been loving Tracer. I've been having so much fun with her. And this looks like a pretty massive – it's not even – I mean, it's kind of a nerf, but it's basically just a reorganization of how you even would play her, right?
Yeah. They've really dinged her burst capability here. Blink's cooldown is up. Melee's damage is down. Recall's cooldown is up. And Pulse Bomb's damage is down. But they gave her a decent bump in her health and her health regen. And her basic attack damage went from 27 to 29, which doesn't sound like much, but that's over a 7% jump.
Yeah, all of these percentage-based, when you look at the stats of the percentages, they're large swings. Mm-hmm. I mean, 33% increase in the blink cooldown, 13%, 15%, all these are big swings. So they're really changing how she is intended to be played, I think.
Right. And so I'm in the camp of I like Tracer. I'm not excruciatingly passionate about her, but she is a hero that I frequently come back to where I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Let's play some Tracer. I want to finish kills. I want to make sure that those heroes that I think are going to get away do not get away, and Tracer's the hero I go to. Now, I am not I'm not great with Tracer. I think I know enough to be dangerous. I am certainly not maximizing my burst. So to someone like me and kind of realizing that my burst capability with Tracer was not where it should have been in the first place, I look at these changes. I'm like, cool, I think this makes me a better Tracer because I already played her as this kind of lock-on, little more of a sustain Tracer than a burst.
Yeah. Well, I think then you'll probably like it because as a sustain, her basic attack damage is going up, right? So that's cool. I just think it's going to – her mobility, which is really her key feature, is how she can pop in, pop out, move around fast, blink, blink, blink. All of that has been nerfed. All of that has increased cooldown, increased cooldown on a recall, increased cooldown on blink recharging. Even Jumper, her trait from level 7 now adds to blink's cooldown. So it's all, I think, slowing her down and reducing the ability for her to pop in and kill somebody and pop out.
Yeah, I mean, in the developer comments, they mentioned that this is part of an ongoing effort to, in like direct quote, trim the frustration of playing against certain heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see, you know, I understand the feel bad from Tracer. I certainly have some, like, I've had games where I get very annoyed with Tracer, but I also love it. Like, when you get the one up on Tracer, you feel great because it is difficult to catch a Tracer. I had a game just today, just playing a quick match, getting on Sonya, you know, getting more used to her post nerf. We'll talk about that in a second. And, oh man, it felt good to land a spear. Landing a spear on a Tracer that's like, oh, I've got you. And you just stand your ground, turn around, smack her in the face of the spear. I've never seen anyone run away so fast. It was wonderful.
But I think that's going to be interesting on both sides, right? Because that was what was so fun about playing against a Tracer is, yeah, she's this annoying wasp flying around you. But if you swat her, all it takes is one little swat and you kill her. And now with her increased health regen, maybe it won't feel like that anymore. Maybe she, you know, yes, she won't be so buzzy around your head, but when you grab her and smack her, maybe you won't be able to kill her right away. So yeah. I think maybe that might not be as fun.
There also seems to be a theme, both in the PTR changes and some of the live changes, the changes that are already live in the game, of opening up counterplay or opening up vulnerability in a lot of heroes. And I think increasing the charge cooldown on Blink is an example of that. I'm going to talk about some changes with Varian that I think are an example of that. And there's even more, as I mentioned, in those live changes. So I think
get yourself into trouble and you will be in trouble.
Exactly.
You have to be smart enough not to get yourself into trouble and be stuck with a longer cooldown.
Right. Right. They're making you pay for taking risks, which I think that's a healthy path for them to head down.
Right.
But anyway, she's not alone on the PTR. Varian is also... I feel like we could do an entire episode just on Varian.
Yeah, this is crazy. The big change to Varian, I think, it shows a willingness for them to throw out any kind of established rules they might have hero to hero and go, what makes the most sense for this hero? Because you would think that heroics are heroics and they're at level 10 and that's the hard and fast rule unless you're Chromie, right?
Or Tracer, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, Tracer. But man, this is an interesting change for an established character that's been in the game a while now.
Yeah, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's completely out of left field. It's a huge change that surprised and excited me, but it's also something I feel has come up on this show, on other shows. I've seen it on the subreddit thrown around a lot, is that Varian suffers because he doesn't become a full hero until 10. Whatever path you take him down, you have to wait till 10 until he feels like he's a full hero. And they are addressing that by moving his heroics to level 4. Not level 1, level 4. And a lot of reshuffling is being done as a result. However, to get the simple stuff out of the way, Taunt and Twin Blades, no changes.
That's to me the craziest thing, is that they can move these heroics up this far and not feel like they have to actually change their functionality in any way. That's kind of amazing.
I mean, that's I think that's the largest reason why they've messed with base level statistics. Like his health is being reduced by over 20%, as well as his regen. But his health scaling is going up. It went from 3% to 4%. That's a 33% increase. Also, his base attack damage was reduced sizably, not quite 20% of a reduction there for his basic attack damage, but then the scaling was increased as well. So later on in the game, he'll get more of it back. Me, as someone who goes almost exclusively Taunt Varian, unless I find myself in just that beautiful world where not only would Twin Blades be a good idea, but my entire team is in on it. They're like, yeah, Twin Blades it up, man. That is I love it. I do not take it unless I get permission.
Right. I almost always pick Taunt myself. But it's interesting. Yeah, you can – another one where you can probably get yourself into trouble if you taunt people at level 4 with that lower health. But as you said, as it scales up, you beef up, you know, later in the game.
Right, right. So the longer into the game you go, the closer to old Varian he becomes. If you take Taunt, you still get that 30% increase in max health on top of the passive 15 armor. But it's happening at level 4, not level 10. So that 20% reduction to health and regen that's also going live with this change doesn't hurt as bad, again, if you're going for the tank route.
Right.
But yeah, so as a tank Varian, I like these changes a lot. I've seen a lot of damage Varians rather concerned because of that basic attack damage reduction. They're really feeling it.
That's a big reduction to 91 to 74. That's huge. It's going to be interesting. I wonder how much it'll help actual teams that have Varians on them also, because you find out what kind of Varian you've got a lot earlier. That can be helpful too if you have an uncommunicative Varian.
I mean, it's usually helpful to know before you start the game, but sure.
Yeah. Well, you're in more communicative games than I am then, because oftentimes it's a mystery until we're at 10. It's like, oh, okay. Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah. But my gut reaction is I really like this. Being able to craft my variant significantly earlier on.
Yeah.
Again, I feel I've made it clear I'm a little biased since I tend to go taunt, but as far as other things that are getting moved around, they're messing with some lesser pick talents. Overpower at level 1 has had a significant bump to its damage bonus, but it's because I don't think I've ever seen anyone take it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of just a a lesser picked talent. And then a lot of other things had to move elsewhere. So if all the heroics are going to level 4, well, level 4 talents are going to level 10. So Shieldwall and Warbringer are now at 10. But they're getting added functionality. Shield Wall is now reducing parry's cooldown to only 5 seconds, but it removes one charge, so you don't get that double parry or that double parry store up. And this is what I'm talking about. Even though the cooldown's only 5 seconds, you now know once that first parry is used, that's your window. You have 5 seconds to lay into this variant because you know the second one isn't going to immediately come after the first.
Right. Yeah, which can be so frustrating when you see that first one come up and you're like, ah, we got him. Nope, there's a second one. Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As for Warbringer, you can now also charge two allied heroes if you take Warbringer, which as a lover of Intervene in World of Warcraft, yes. Although yeah. I think they baked that in the charge a very long time ago. Now that I think about it.
Right. Well, it's cool. Like, you know, get out of dodge kind of use for it and ability to move around inside team fights a little better. I think it's cool.
Yeah. And then we didn't even we talked about like the base stats, but his basic abilities also received some tweaks as well. Heroic strikes damage is down a little over 10% from 140 to 125. The damage scaling went up by the same amount. It went up by a little over 10%. Whereas parry now has a 2 second longer cooldown, so it's going from 8 to 10. And the mana cost has been increased from 15 to 20. So not as mana efficient, longer periods of time to recharge those parry charges.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, he was the first and still only multi-class hero in the game. I thought after he came out that we would see multi-class be a thing that they would try more often, and they really haven't done. But in absence of multi-class, are there any other heroes you think would make sense to move their heroics off of level 10 and put them up a little earlier? Or is this a very rare, unique case?
Nothing jumps to mind.
Yeah.
No.
I agree. And nothing jumps to mind either. But it's interesting to know that this is a possibility as a way to rework a character by literally just moving their ult up sooner. I just didn't imagine that to even be on the table for them. It's a really cool new possibility now.
Yeah. Like you said, these are the kind of changes that, whether or not this is successful or not, like in the long term, in terms of the meta, you know, a variant drops off or a variant becomes too powerful in either direction. I'm not going to chalk this up to a misstep. I like seeing these bold steps and instills a big sense of confidence in me. In the team's ability to work on this game because they're not afraid to take risks.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, this is just a huge change.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it shakes out. But for now, I'm digging it.
Yeah. I mean, I love, like you said, that they're not afraid to take risks. It doesn't seem like they hold anything as precious. If it makes sense, if it feels like the right choice, they're willing to give it a shot. And that to me is the cornerstone of a really exciting living game.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you, by the way, sidebar, did you see IGN redid their Heroes review this week?
No, I didn't even notice that.
They did. They redid their infamous review, and it's now, I believe, at an 8 out of 10.
Oh, or that's good.
Did they change to a percentage? I don't remember. I don't read IGN that much anymore.
Improved their thoughts on it. They thought they raised their estimation of the game.
Yeah, it's rather glowing. So I thought that was hilarious.
That is, well, at least they're willing to do that, but it, you know, whatever, damage is done, IGN.
I'm not sure that swayed anyone's opinion. I think you played it or you didn't, regardless of IGN. I mean, you could get in and play it for free anyway, so
yeah,
you always make your own opinion. but let's talk about what's live in the game right now, things that we're not going to have to wait until Tuesday to see, and that's quite a bit. They're coming, Jeff, for our picks. They're coming for all of our popular heroes right now. Mm-hmm. It seems first up on the chopping block is Greymane. The cooldown on Razor Swipe has had a full second tacked onto it. PvE isn't as good as it used to be on Greymane.
Right. Little tweaks. I think that's good. Greymane, it felt like exactly what they say. It's a little bit of a safe pick all the time. There's really no bad situation for Greymane, which is fine, but it's nice to have a little specialization and say, oh, he's not good at everything. He's not a Swiss Army knife, you know?
Yeah. He still kind of is, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I haven't tried him since this change, but it's not a huge change.
He's a Swiss Army knife where all of the knives are knives except one, which is a gun.
Yeah.
And if you throw it, it explodes. And then Maiev, I would say a little bit to my surprise now, because it seems like Maiev has been more or less reined in. But according to the team, there's Maiev still doing too well. Too much damage at a fan, too much damage at a blade dance. So those are getting reined in. And the big one, they're increasing Vault's cooldown. And this is they specifically said they want more opportunities for punishment. And this is what I was talking about with the blink and with the parry on Varian.
It's not a small increase. 9 seconds to 12 seconds on Vault of the Wardens.
Huge.
Woof. Woof.
Yeah.
Maiev has completely fallen off out of my league. Nobody plays Maiev. Maiev doesn't get bans anymore. Not a scary character for most people anymore. I feel like this is targeting much higher level play than I see. And I think it's a bummer because I think it means that Maiev just, you don't see him very much. I still play him from time to time. I still really enjoy the hero, but man, that Vault of the Wardens cooldown is a killer.
That for me, the Vault was the linchpin of Maiev. Yeah, she's killing people with fan and with blade dance, but the Vault was that was like the feel bad moment. And I'm talking about a hero that can literally pull me somewhere I don't want to be, and I'm complaining more about her just avoiding damage.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm really down with what the team is talking about. Those opportunities for punishment, because I think it's such a healthy mindset to be in, and it's agency that you can take after the draft is complete. It's like, all right, these are the heroes I'm going to go up against. Start taking mental note of the abilities that once you see them, it is now time to act.
Yeah. And you're right. It is. Identifying those moments where a player does something they shouldn't have done, gets themselves into trouble, and they should have to pay for that instead of having a get out of jail free card on the kit that's always available. With Tracer, it's kind of have that basically always able to just dip away. And with Maiev, it's like, oh, nope, can't hurt me. So, and I can understand them identifying those as pain points for other players. It's like, oh, well, you just have an invincible moment. Okay, fine. So making that a little rarer, I don't fault them for that, but I do think that it makes the character a little less fun to play.
Yeah, I think this on top of everything else, on top of the damage reduction from containment disc from Phantom Knives, cooldown reduction was a containment disc thing, but the damage reduction on Phantom Knives, and then Blade Dance at level 7, on top of the cooldown for Vault of the Wardens, might be a little too much. But we'll see. I was still seeing Maiev from time to time in my games, to varying degrees of effectiveness. Sometimes it seemed overbearing, other times it seemed like a really fair game. To me, it felt like they had hit a balanced state with Maiev.
Yeah.
More or less.
I thought so too. It felt like we had gotten there, but I'm guessing this is for high level play. And it seems like the containment disc Warden Cage stuff feels like everybody was picking Warden's Cage, and they want to encourage Containment Disc a little bit.
I'm still taking Warden's Cage. It's amazing.
It's so fun. Yeah.
At a game earlier just today where we were owning so hard that the enemy Maiev would put Warden's Cage down, and I just wanted to get into it. I was trying to get into it as Sony. I'm like, let me in. I want to kill you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was funny. And then, they came for Greymane. They came for Maiev. There's only one other hero that just pops up in mind. Of course they're coming for them. Thrall.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so apparently the bounce range increase has just allowed Crash Lightning to run away with the pick and the win rate. It is just, there's no level 1 talent diversity is the vibe I'm getting from the developer comments. And the maximum, so the maximum potential damage from the stack portion of the quest talent has been removed, and the requirement for completion is going back to what it used to be. It's going back to 30 stacks because the devs just want to push that power spike later into the game.
Right. Yeah. I think that's healthy. I think that's fine. Again, I thought it's pretty easy quest to complete at 20. You do it pretty fast. So
yeah. Yeah. That being said, the max damage bonus, massive reduction, went from 480 to 360.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you still playing a lot of Thrall?
No, because I never get it to pick him.
Yeah.
If I want to play Thrall, I got to go into Quick Match or play Team League and tell my friends they're not allowed.
Yeah. It's interesting that that's really the only change to Thrall. I really expected there to be some more tweaking, but it's interesting that that's really the only change.
Yeah, I still feel like Thrall is... Thrall rose from a lack of involvement. I mean, yes, it was the Crash Lightning change. It was the bounce range increase that really pushed him up over the top. But other than that, I think it was just the lack of messing with him that allowed him to rise to the top. So I'm not ready to see an overcorrection on Thrall.
I think that's wise. Yeah.
He's been out of the limelight so damn long. I'm fine with it. Plus, he's a hero where I see both heroics picked from time to time, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. I remember that time, last time Thrall got a big rework, I don't know how long ago, a year, 2 years, when Earthquake got that big change. And
was this the one where you healed off of Earthquake?
Yeah. And
that was so broken.
Thrall was like win button, you know, whoever got Thrall won the game. Yeah.
Let's not return there. That was around the same time that Shaman was win button in Hearthstone. So yeah.
Right.
I'm starting to, Illuminati confirmed. but it's not all bad news. Some of the less loved assassins, sadly not Raynor. I want some Raynor love. Okay, Heroes team.
Didn't they tell us that Raynor was going to be one of the next reworks like months ago?
Did they? If they did, I have forgotten about it.
I remember hearing that. Maybe I'm inventing it. I remember hearing that.
Happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want some Raynor love. But Vala, the base damage on her multi-shot went up, and Zul'jin got some like talents no one ever picks changed. Who cares about that? His basic attack damage was buffed.
Wow. I guess nobody's picking Zul'jin right now.
Yeah, Kyle went on vacation and his pick rate dropped through the floor and they're like, shit, we need to buff him. Buff Zul'jin, what happened? And I just didn't want to call them and tell him, no, it's okay. Kyle's just on vacation.
Well, he'll be happy when he gets back.
He will be. He will be. I'm gonna bug him when he gets off the boat, just like, dude, Zul'jin buff, oh my god. I know you're trying to relax and not think about stuff, but just so you know.
Well, I feel like it's commendable that you've gone this far on the show without mentioning Sonya, really. Now I'm gonna invite you to talk at length about the Sonya changes.
It's not commendable. I just saved the thing I want to talk about the most for last.
Fair enough.
Yes. Sonya, I split her out of this mostly just because she's not an assassin, although she kind of is. But Sonya got some changes, as I think we all kind of saw coming. She was really dominating, since her rework. And, there was a Furious Blow change. I don't care. It's not a talent I was taking. It's not part of the narrative with what's been going on with Sonya. I want to just jump straight to level 4 and talk about Battle Rage and move on from there. There's only 2 charges now in Battle Rage. There are not going to be 3 charges, and they moved the use cooldown from 5 to 8. So you're losing a charge and you're gaining cooldown time. They're beating the shit out of Battle Rage.
Yeah.
and so there's that. They haven't messed with the increased damage to mercenaries, thankfully. Then at level 13, Mystical Spear, the cooldown reduction has been reduced. So, yo, dog, I heard you like reductions. It went from 3 to 2 seconds. And then also at level 16, on Rampage, the Ancient Spear cooldown reduction has been reduced from 3/4 of a second to 1/2 a second. Now, Jeff, I am assuming that you are assuming that I'm going to have some words about these changes.
That was a good assumption.
These are fair and it needed to happen.
Wow. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
You're like, nerf me, bro. Nerf me.
Yeah. I logged in once I knew these changes went live and, you know, just tried some quick match, continued some quick match today with some buddies, and Sony still feels gnarly.
You're like Zuckerberg when he was like, maybe we need to be regulated. I don't know. We're a little too powerful.
A little bit. That's yes. Although there's much darker themes going on with Zuckerberg and Facebook than I think is going on with a fictional barbarian from Diablo.
I don't know. Not too far apart, in my opinion.
One's trying to keep the darkest evil at bay, and the other one is Sonya from Diablo.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, but no, overall I think this is fine. Battle Rage hurts. That one hurts me. Like I look at that, I'm like, oh man, you took a charge away and you increased the cooldown. Ouch.
Yeah.
But I'm still taking it and it's still keeping me alive. So.
All right. Oh, you've played her since this went live?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She feels all right.
I have not deviated from my build at all and it is still very effective.
All right.
Which uses all three nerfed talents here.
I've been Sonya curious for a long time. I never got into Sonya. I hear you talk so highly of her, and I've always thought about picking her up, but I have not. She's not in my stable.
Yeah, it's this world we live in where specialists should be good because of the state of laning and the importance of XP gathering and destroying structures. But you probably shouldn't dedicate an entire slot to just a specialist. Where
right.
Now I'm just all right. Well, I'll get on Sonya, who can push lanes just as good as anyone else, and can also team fight like a bloodthirsty murderer in a Jason mask.
right.
Well,
there you go.
Yeah, yeah. But I think these are fair changes. Like I said, when I saw Battle Rage, I was like, no, screw you, Heroes Team. And then I got in the game. I'm like, oh nope. This is still fine. This is totally fine.
Oh, good.
Well, yeah. There were a bunch
that
of other
is not how I thought that was gonna go.
Yeah, no, I am not a rogue from World of Warcraft. I know when I'm broken. Okay,
fair enough.
A bunch of other changes I'm just gonna highlight here. If you want, you obviously go read the notes in full as you should, but things you should be aware of: Blaze's bunker went up to a 50 second cooldown, and there is now a 1 second cooldown before you can use exit bunker. You can't just in out to your heart's content.
Drives me a little crazy because I cannot tell you how often I accidentally click on the bunker as a person who's just running away from a fight or wandering around the outskirts of a fight, and all of a sudden the bunker pops up and now I'm inside the bunker and there's that graphic overlay and I'm like, what happened? I'm in the bunker. All right. I guess that 1 second really is me realizing what just happened before I can leave.
So it's going to be no different.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
It sounds like it's not going to affect you.
Man, that is annoying though. I have not figured out a way to prepare myself for a bunker just appearing right where I was going to click.
I'm starting to get better about it with the bunker. I'm still god awful about it with Medivh's portals, and that's just because about once a month a Medivh ends up in a game on my team. That's about the frequency with which I have to deal with portals, and I just forget about them and then click, oh no, why am I behind the wall?
Yeah.
So it's no good. But yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, if nothing else, just take this as extra incentive to learn to play around the bunker, Jeff. Always expect the bunker.
Always expect the bunker. Always be bunkering.
Although, hey, the longer cooldown. So you get more time before you need to expect it again.
Right.
On your own team, which is a funny place to have to put your brain. Artanis is a little more mana efficient now. The cost of both Blade Dash and Twin Blades is down. So. Cool. Bye, Blade Dash and Twin Blades, if this was a stock market show. Tyrael's, you should be aware that your allied shield bonus has gone from 100% down to 75% on your level 1 Justice for All. Medivh, I talked about you already, but your Arcane Explosion damage was reduced while Force of Magi and Reabsorption were buffed. And homework for all Into the Nexus listeners, keep an eye on Aurel. And right in, because I still have no interest in playing her. But her basic attack went up. Detainment Strike's cooldown went down. Resurrect had 20 seconds shaved off of its cooldown and got a substantial range increase.
Big buffs on Aurel, huh? Wow.
This feels like a sleeper. This feels like I'm going to see nothing but Aurel again very soon, which means Vala's back on the menu, which means, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you got that increased basic attack damage on Zul'jin, and Aurel's better. That might be a combo you'll see a little more of.
Ooh. Or you could just go Vala. Right. Yeah. But that's cool. I mean, it helps her self-hope generation more.
Yeah.
Which has been an issue. And then Malfurion had two of his most popular talents nerfed. So Nature's Swiftness at 1 and Nature's Balance at 16. Keep an eye on that, you Malfurion players. Personally, I have not gotten the hang of Malfurion since his rework.
Me neither. I have not been. I used to play a ton of Malfurion, and I have not wrapped my brain around him. And I really haven't giving him much of a chance. But interesting that he's getting those nerfs.
Yeah. But yeah. So those are both patches, ones that have yet to come to pass and ones that have. So a lot of changes in the Nexus. Already here and still to come with Phoenix next week. Keep an eye on that. Before we move on, we have some patrons to thank supporting us over at patreon.com/ITN. It's the entire reason you're here, Jeff. I mean, that nice guy. But so the Patreon is awesome because it lets you out there, you listeners, that if you get some value out of the show and you want to give some value back, you can. You don't have to. Show's always going to be free and will continue to be so. But if you want to give something back to the show, the patreon.com/ITN is the best way to do so. And we have hit multiple goals over there that have allowed us to improve the show. One of those things being paying guest hosts to come back on month after month. People like you, Jeff, people like Dunk Train. And that's just rad.
I'm so grateful to the great patrons of Into the Nexus for making my appearance here possible every month. I love doing it. And I'm so glad you guys value the show and value my appearance on it.
Yeah, at some point, I just want you to show up and just like, I don't know, in a costume that just says in really stupid font, just patron goal. Because at some point, I'm just gonna boil you down to you're not a person, you're not a human being, you're just a patron goal.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Anyways, got some new patrons to thank this week. We want to thank Scott C. Jr., Trevor P., and Ben S. Thank you very much for supporting Into the Nexus. We appreciate it. Now, instead of a strategy, because Kyle's not here and he's the brainchild of basically all of those, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already kind of used my brain power for the beginning of the new season. I thought I'd bring in an article that I saw on Kotaku and kind of use it as a talking point, which is that Riot, Blizzard, Twitch, and many other companies, according to Kotaku, over 30 different companies, are teaming up to fight toxic gaming behavior.
Yeah, which, of course, we can all agree is a worthwhile endeavor. And I think strength in numbers, right? The fact that maybe Riot couldn't do this by themselves, maybe Blizzard couldn't do it by themselves. But the fact that all these companies are teaming up, maybe that gives them a little more ability to take it on and do something about it. But what does one do? What does not even just one do? What do all these companies together, what can be done even?
Yeah, that's the thing I found. What I find the most interesting here, and the thing I really just wanted to highlight, is the fact that we have now over 30 different companies coming together to form what they're calling the Fair Play Alliance, which sounds like something out of like Captain Planet. Like it's very like 90s environmental.
Optimism.
Yes, 90s optimism. That's a great way to put it. Yeah, it's that exactly. The Kotaku article itself, it doesn't go into much. It references a GDC panel that took place with some key figures from Riot, Blizzard, and Twitch. But then it didn't talk about plans, which I just thought was odd. It's like, here's this thing. They're going to come together, going to try and find kind of values to fight online toxicity that they can all agree on. But they didn't really talk about any points or examples that they may have already reached.
Well, the problem that I have with this is that if I had infinite money and infinite time, what would I do about this? Short of hiring a referee to watch every game played and, you know, making a human call on all of the bad behavior, I don't honestly know what you do, because I don't think frustration in and of itself is a bad thing. I think that's part of competition. I do think this toxic language and stuff is bad, and you can, I guess, write up some scripts and bots to police certain language. But what do those things do? Just censor that language out? Do they make a list of people to get banned? Short of bans, I mean, even bans themselves have been around long enough for us to know that they haven't really fixed the problem. I just don't know what I would even suggest with the resources and clout that all these companies have.
I'm not sure either. But again, the reason I wanted to bring it up is this is like this weird glimmer of hope, because yeah, you're right. You hit on where my brain immediately goes, which is, well, across all the major online game creators, just about all the obvious things have been tried, and toxic game behavior still exists. And to a certain degree, the pessimist in me is like, well, there's always going to be bullies. There always has been bullies. There's only so much you can do. But I think it's a good thing that we now have multiple minds from all the corners of online game creators meeting up to try and think of the next step.
Yes, yes. That's what does give me hope, is that there's a lot smarter people than me on this problem, and now they're all teamed up. And so hopefully this results in some sweeping changes. And the really, I think, encouraging thing, and the point at which I think this in particular initiative gains a lot of traction, is it's not – I think not having Riot having some rules and Blizzard having some rules and Twitch having some rules and Epic having some rules and PlayerUnknown having some – all of these different things having their own little walled gardens that they're trying to police. If there is some way to create a broadly agreed upon gaming rules and all these companies kind of police in the same way, or create systems where self-policing happens in the same way, where there's a baseline code of conduct that is expected when you get into games made by any company, I think that could be a really powerful thing, that it basically indoctrinates a generation of people into interacting with video games on the same terms. And then that just becomes the norm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
so that's where I put my hope, is that by mere fact of them all getting on the same page, that maybe gamers themselves will have to get on the same page. And then it just becomes how you play, you know, how you play in video games, because all the companies agreed that's how you play.
Yeah, to it. Yeah. No, that's it's interesting. I mean, it's in a weird way reminds me of when gaming ratings came out.
It's right. Like,
all right, well, let's form something. Let's get together. Let's figure it out before the government does it for us. I don't think there's necessarily a risk of government coming in here and handing out bans to multiplayer players. But
well, I mean, our president doesn't even know that there are ratings on video games. So,
God damn it, Jeff. I had almost moved on from how annoyed I was at that particular smokescreen. On Kyle and I's other show, Weak Sauce, I called it the jangling of the keys. Oh, the jangling of the keys over there. Hey, you guys are talking about the actual problem here. Let's talk about the fake problem.
Right.
But thanks, Jeff. Thanks. I appreciate it.
But yeah, I mean, you're right. It's one hopes that they find concrete solutions to this. But even in the absence of actual concrete solutions, I think just having a united front is a big deal and worthwhile, and kudos to them. Kudos to all these companies for setting aside any kind of perceived competition that they might have with one another and realizing that this is bigger than any one company.
Yeah, no, I agree. In terms of the game itself, I mean, I've always, for a lot, very long time now, have been saying we need a commendation system, something beyond just meaningless upvotes at the end for MVP.
Yeah, I agree.
Those are fine. Those are fun. But they do nothing for the game. Some way to incentivize, like if you have reporting, also have commendations, have a way to incentivize people to be good leaders, be good team players, be good soldiers. As well as just don't be horrible people.
Yeah. Positive reinforcement is proven to be even more effective than negative reinforcement. So,
right.
Yeah. You know, give us carrots on the end of sticks instead of just sticks.
Yes. Keep the sticks.
Keep the sticks.
Tie some carrots to the end of them, please.
And I think you can improve the sticks too. You know, you can improve. I mean, a year ago or more, I remember hearing the Blizzard, the Heroes team talk about the idea of letting people know that when they're reporting results in a ban, or you know, having more feedback about what your reporting does, instead of just this feeling of like, well, I sent this message off into the ether about this person who was horrible, and that's the best I can do. I guess I'll feel better. You know, all of those things can be improved, and I hope we find new and better ways to make our games more pleasurable. But having said that, and I wonder what your opinion is on this, I'm a person that gets very passionate while I play, and I do get frustrated, and I don't think that competitive gaming needs to be a completely friction-free environment. You can still have people talking to one another and saying, oh, that was such a dumb thing to do, or, you know, I don't think it needs to be completely candy canes and rainbows all the time. So I'm not advocating for just pure joy to everybody. I'd like a lot more joy and a lot less awfulness, but I also think you can have – it doesn't have to be a completely rounded edges world.
No, I agree. And the Kotaku article brings that up. I think it was a quote from Vol from Riot said that you can end up in, you know, games with close friends. And those friends are probably – there are certain groups of friends that love each other deeply, and when they're playing a game – curse each other out and demean each other horribly,
right?
And that's just the way that they talk to each other. I have a few friends in my life like that.
Sure, we all do. We all have the people that we can, you know, be a little saltier with, and it turns into terms of endearment. You know, it's a representative of how comfortable you are that you can rip on each other. You know, it's family. With family, you can be really vile to each other.
That's pretty much the entire reason Super Smash Brothers is as important to me as it is because of hours upon hours of sitting in my friend's living room telling him to go die.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that's why a lot of these problems are complicated, because if you just have, you know, even if you have the world's smartest AI going, well, you said a naughty thing, it's got to be able to understand context and allow for, you know, trying to clean up the space, but not completely nerf it.
Yeah. I think it's a good place to have their heads at. Also, you're making me think of, like, I mean, that's a Doctor Who episode where this is taken too far.
Yeah.
It's like you curse and enjoy and at no one at all, and your computer just sets on fire.
Right.
No, I didn't mean that. I was just excited.
Or that great Black Mirror episode with Bryce Dallas Howard, where, like, everybody is rating everybody at all the time, and so you have to put on a fake smile and happiness, or else your rating will go down. I mean, there's ways to take all of this too far, so these are not easy problems.
I didn't see that Black Mirror episode, but I did see that Orville episode, so that's good. I'm glad to know that it extends beyond just one science fiction fantasy show. Oh, that's great. Well, anyway, if you want to read the article in full, it's titled Riot, Blizzard, and Twitch are teaming up to fight toxic gaming behavior over on Kotaku right now. Check it out. Let's wrap it up with an email or two by doing this.
Darkness, stop calling.
Does anyone else hear that buzzing?
Hold on. Darkness just texted me.
You can send your emails to itncast@gmail.com. Write in about whatever you want. I probably should keep it Heroes related, but it's fine if you get off topic. Stim Sheep is going to kick us off this week. He says, hello. Recently, I have found success with ETC more than other tanks around Gold 5. I have found that it really encourages the team to kill someone, because with a combination of Power Slide and Face Melt, you can isolate a player and you can solo lane if you really need. Do you have any other tank suggestions for helping to isolate someone slightly out of place who can also still solo lane a bit? My initial thoughts were Diablo and maybe Stitches. Let me know your thoughts. I used to rock Muradin, Johanna, and ECC as my main three, but I have found Johanna falling off and Muradin feeling like a sucker pick for some reason. Thank you, Zach, aka Stim Sheep. And yeah, man, just play Blaze. Keep playing Blaze and don't stop playing Blaze.
Yeah, Blaze is definitely the new hotness. Pun very much intended.
Oh, yes.
But I also think your instinct to go Diablo will probably help and is not a bad decision. I think you'll probably have a lot of fun with Diablo, and he definitely can isolate people and get picks like it sounds like you like.
Yeah.
I don't agree with Muradin being a sucker pick anymore, though. I don't think that's the case.
I think Muradin is always good in the right hands with the right team. He's just a good, solid vanilla tank. He's got everything you kind of need. He's not the best laner in the world, though. I think you're in the right headspace for Stitches, but in terms of applying already like known skill sets and muscle memory for how heroes play, I think Diablo transfers from an ETC player a lot easier than, say, Stitches, because the way the hook works versus something like a Shadow Charge or a Power Slide is much different.
Yeah, and Stitches is a lot of fun. I love Stitches, but I think you'll probably have a lot more fun playing Diablo. And I mean, the reason you brought up Blaze, right, is because he's got that CC. He's got that self-sustain. He can lane like the best of them. So he kind of checks all the boxes that it sounds like you want, Zach.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, he's not as nimble as an ETC. ETC is so fluid. It's what I love the most about him, that ability that at any point you can just be like, oh, you messed up, and I'm capitalizing on it with this power slide as I go through you to where you really don't want me to be.
Right.
And you're not going to get that with anyone. Diablo is closer, I think, than Blaze, because Blaze doesn't have the ability to then... He can't stun them and then throw them over him.
Right.
But it's like, if I had to think of the order in which I would start transferring my skill set to other tanks, I would keep on ETC, move into Diablo, and then experiment with Blaze.
Agreed. Yeah.
But also his, I mean, he mentions laning here, and Blaze's solo laning is nothing to scoff at.
Definitely. And much better than Diablo's.
Yes. No, I like them both, but yeah, it's some solid stuff. But have you found this with anything? Like, just anything? Well, I hesitate to ask. Did you find it with recently nerfed heroes, or just like, oh man, it's clicking?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been playing a ton of Tracer, as I said, and that's been like my main. I've been having so much fun with her. So it'll be interesting to see after that patch goes live if I can sort of relearn not to get myself into trouble. But those are traps, right? When you've played a hero a lot recently and you've got those cooldowns in your blood and you don't need to even look at them, you just feel it, you know exactly what you can do and what you can get away with and how you can get out of a sticky situation, and then the game goes, nope, relearn all that. So that's what happened with Malthiel for me, whereas like I was just owning with Malthiel. I just felt so confident with him, and then just a few tweaks to how he's played and now everything feels wrong and I'm getting myself into situations I don't like, and it's, you have to unlearn all those things that have become ingrained in you.
Yeah. As Yoda once said, you must unlearn what you have learned.
Yes. Yeah. But he also said failure the best teacher is. So, you know, I'm sticking with that too.
Can't wait to watch that again. Holding out for the Blu-ray. I'm holding out for it. All right. Second email today and final one comes to us from Brenton J. Brenton writes, I have a couple of questions for you guys. One, what is your favorite Blizzard cinematic ever made? I don't like dealing in absolutes. Brenton's answer is from StarCraft 1. He says it's about the infested Dominion science vessel Amerigo. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. He said the visual quality is old school, but the content is pretty intense. It reminds me of the movie Aliens. I wasn't sure if I remembered exactly what he was talking about. I thought I did, but luckily he includes a YouTube link. And oh, yeah, man. Oh, man. I love those old StarCraft cinematics. They are jank.
Well, it's funny that it says it reminds me of the movie Aliens, because, you know, StarCraft has become a global phenomenon. But when it was released, they were straight up ripping off Aliens and Predator.
And Warhammer.
But Aliens, I mean, it literally is Aliens and Predator. It's like, you're not fooling anybody, Blizzard, but it's become its own thing, and good for them. But yeah, it wasn't a mistake that it reminded you of Aliens.
I don't think that's a bad thing, though. I think right now I feel it's very popular to hate on things that are obviously cribbing from other things. I'm looking at a collective hive mind that hates Ready Player One before you've even seen the movie.
I have a hard time with this one because there are so many great Blizzard cinematics. Blizzard cinematic team through the years has been consistently one of the best in video games. And I will tell you the thing that popped into my head first. And I hesitate to say it just because it doesn't show my true Blizz cred, which is that I've been around for a long, long time. And there are probably older cinematics that would make me seem more cool if I announced them. But I think honestly, my favorite one is the Legion cinematic with Varian and Sylvanas and the skyships and Varian's fight. Like, that is amazing. Super recent, very fresh in my mind, clearly, but still, oh, it's one of the best. The first time I saw it at BlizzCon, I wept. Like, a tear came to my eye because it was so emotionally powerful, and we were seeing something cool. So good.
Were you a dad when the first time you saw it? Because there's that, like, maybe. That is the most epic, like, son or father talking to his son you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ever. Like, I realize so they basically did the same thing in the Wrath of the Lich King cinematic, but it's played for the fall of Arthas, basically. It's King Taranis speaking of all of his hopes and his dreams for his son to become a great king, and bam.
Turns into the Lich. Arthas is so there. Cool.
That one got me too, because I like it when the Horde and the Alliance team up. I'm going into battle for Azeroth being like, come on, guys, just.
Yeah. You're like me when I was a kid. I always liked the Tom and Jerry episodes where they were friends.
I can't say that was the case. That was the case. I wanted them to go one step further. Basically, I wanted Itchy and Scratchy to be its own cartoon. For me, it's hard. Like, I feel like my cop-out answer is Wrath of Lich King because I'm such an Arthas fanboy. Mm-hmm. And like, it is beautiful.
It's a good
like,
one, though. It is. It's a good one.
It is. I do think, like, artistically, it's the pinnacle for me, because it's like, it's very cheesy with like the dichotomy that it's doing, but it just works so well. And I still put it on this day just to, because like, you know what I want? I want Goosebumps. I'm gonna turn on that cinematic and turn my system up. So like, that's probably if I'm being honest, it probably is my answer, but. Like, when I just think about, like, what's the one where I'm just like, yes, this is Blizzard just distilled to its essence. It's the final cinematic from Heart of the Swarm.
Oh, yeah.
Where you see Kerrigan just tearing
destroying everything.
The Dominion. Yeah. You just get to see Kerrigan just go full out Queen of Blades.
It's badass. Yeah.
And because really, the other day, like, if I had to just be like, I'm sorry, all other Blizzard universes, I have to pick one and the rest of you are going to die forever, I would pick StarCraft.
See, I would pick Warcraft, but I feel you. I have a lot of love in my heart for StarCraft. I just like fantasy more than sci-fi, but I definitely agree that Kerrigan moment is amazing. And you would go, oh, she's the most powerful creature here.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I also love Manx. I think Manx is such a great villain, and oh, the way they animate him and that when he thinks he's one up Kerrigan, and he's like spitting when he talks, basically. Yeah. Like, it's so good. It's everything I was hoping to ever get from StarCraft. And I think part of the big reason why I don't like Legacy of the Void, like, is like, nope, it just can't get better than Heart of the Swarm. That was their pinnacle. That's the end of the actual Western, because Manx is dealt with by the end of it. And now it gets weird and we're going to kill a god, and it just basically turned into an anime. So,
yeah. Yeah. The Protoss fiction for me has never clicked as much, but I kind of agree with you on that.
Yeah. I would have liked it if they had kept them mysterious. Like, too much is explained by the end of Legacy of the Void. I'm like, no, I didn't need to know where that thing came from.
Right.
Yeah. So, but, there's so many good cinematics. And for sure. I remember the first time I booted up Warcraft 3, because I had played StarCraft before that, but it was on the N64, and it was terrible, and it kept me off RTSs for a very, very long time, until my schoolmates in high school just couldn't shut up about Warcraft 3, so I picked it up on a whim. And I was just like, oh my god, they can tell a story like this in an RTS? This is amazing.
Well, even the opening cinematic to World of Warcraft, the original opening cinematic, where it was like, oh my god, I'm inside a world with all these different places and all these different races, and all these cultures are existing in the same place, and it's all seamless, and I could go from one to the other with no loading screen. It was a massive moment in my life that that cinematic conveyed that sense of like, look at all that's in this game, all of these different cultures, all of these different kinds of experiences you can have. It's all represented by the cinematic. I mean, that one is close to my heart too.
Yeah. They do a good job.
Sure do.
There was a second question from Brenton.
All right.
It was seemingly less fanboyish, but Brenton wants to know, has anyone heard anything new about the ranking system coming back? The one we were supposed to already have, I'm assuming he's talking about personal adjustment. I'm stuck in silver. I played 3 games the other day with some diamond and platinum friends, and I got MVP each game. I realize that might not mean a ton, but I really don't think silver is my intended spot. I really wish we could have the new system, as well as wiping the slate clean and starting with new MMR/ranking positions as well. Thanks. Brenton, no, we haven't heard anything new.
No, and that second part that you're hoping for is not going to happen. I hope you don't put a lot of eggs in that basket, because it would be nice. Maybe you want to start a new account. You can get that to happen. But they're not going to give up their data. That data is very useful for them trying to create matches that are appropriate to different players and play styles and playability. So that data is something they don't want to wipe clean. They want to be able to put people in places, and it's unfortunate that the place that you are is the place you don't feel like you should be. I feel that way too. I think most people do. But it's possible to climb, and don't, as these guys say on the show all the time, don't decide your worth by a stupid number in a video game. Go into it looking for enjoyable games. And it's hard to stay in that mindset, but it's useful.
Yeah. I agree. And listen, even if the personal ranking does come back, you know, when it comes back, even if it works correctly, you're still going to have to log a lot of games to climb.
Yeah.
It's hopefully less if it's working correctly, if you're winning, obviously, than before. But at the end of the day, you're going to have to play games. Like, you're going to have to log games one way or the other. There's a certain point where you just need to pull that trigger. And also ask yourself, like how much are you really enjoying those games with your friends? Are you enjoying those games with your friends because you got MVP each game and it's helping your, like, your self-worth, your EP? And I always call it an EP because there's no better word for it. Are you enjoying it because you're playing with friends? If you're enjoying it because you're playing with friends, continue playing the game that way.
Right.
Just because there's this, this popular, opinion that Hero League is like the try hard mode. That's where you go. You got to get your points. That's how you prove that you're good at this game. Who cares? If that's not how you like playing the game, but if you do like playing the game, what's stopping you? Just keep logging games. And if you get your win rate in the green, you will climb, albeit slowly.
Yeah. And I think the idea of a performance-based matchmaking, performance-based rating felt like this magical salve that was going to fix everybody's feeling that they're in the wrong spot. But the truth of the matter is they were always very honest with the fact that it was never going to replace winning games. Winning games is the way you get the most points, the way you move up or down the most efficiently. These were small adjustments in how you play, but winning and losing really is still, and it was always going to be, the bigger variable to worry about. So, you know, if you really want to improve, get better, win more games, and like Jared is saying, play with your buddies. That's never a bad decision to play with your buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing that this week. It wasn't my plan. I was enjoying Hero League. I didn't stop playing it for any reason other than my hero's friends were on. It seemed like every time I wanted to play it, I'm like, cool, let's do this.
Well, there was a very long period that I went through where I never played a game that wasn't Hero League. I only stayed in that mode. And I have since switched into unranked draft a lot more. And it's done a lot for just my pure enjoyment of the game, because I'm free to pick characters that I just seem like they would be fun in this comp, or I just kind of want to get away from playing all of my mains or whatever. And I don't feel that pressure that I feel in Hero League, and that can be really enjoyable too. So I've found a lot more solace in mixing up the modes that I'm playing.
Yeah, me too. Me as well. I've also just I've been, since the new year, I've tried very hard to play multiple games and forcibly take myself out of a hard focus on one. It just helps. I don't know. I've felt mentally healthier as a result of going
back. That's important.
Because that's how I grew up. I played a lot of games. I didn't focus on just one. But it can be, tunnel vision is a real thing. So
yeah.
So take a step back, get some perspective. But at the end of the day, I'd say play the game the way you want to play it. But also, hopefully, that's coming back in soon and will work as intended.
Yeah. Also that. Yeah. Also, I think we're all hopeful that it will work and it will actually feel good.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So keep those emails coming, everyone. ITNcast@gmail.com. That's going to bring us to the end of this episode of Into the Nexus. Can't thank our patrons enough or again or enough times for supporting us. Again, if you like the show, you want to support us, patreon.com/ITN, whether it's $1 an episode or something nuts. like, I don't know, $1 million an episode. No one's ever going to do that, but go for it. I'm not going to stop you.
Hey, yeah, one's going to stop you. You know what? Try it. See what happens.
Yep. Yep. I would like to see the email I would receive from Jeff and Dunk being like, hey guys, I think we need a raise.
Yeah. Our rate went up a little bit. Can we get $1 million an episode?
And that's when I'll go like, no, man, it's cool. Check outside. There's a Tesla in your,
yeah, that'd be cool. You'd be like, no, we're flying you in to record live every week.
Yeah. Oh, and you're moving here, by the way. We built a studio. It's brand new. It's wonderful. Yeah, that'd be good. That'd
I'm
be
into
good.
It.
But seriously, every little bit helps. We appreciate it, folks. Huge thanks to our producers, Declan H. and Cheesy Bob. You guys are awesome. Thank you. You can get some Internexus swag. We have t-shirts available over at shirts.amove.tv. There's also custom etched glassware, pint glasses, coffee mugs, things of the like. You can find that at etched.amove.tv. We typically record live Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern time right here on twitch.tv/amovetv. Follow the show on Twitter at ITMcast. And before we go, Jeff, man, you held down the fort so well with me. Thank you. I'm so glad you could be here. You do a lot of other stuff. I'm actually a big fan of your podcasts. Where can people find you?
Well, there's lots of places. The easiest way is to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I do a weekly stream with Kyle Ferguson, who you may be aware of. He was obviously gone this week, but he will be back next week. It's usually Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Pacific time. It's over on Caffeine, which is a really cool streaming service that lets him coach me in real time. He watches me play and watches my stream, and because there's no lag, he's able to coach me. It's cool. So if you go to caffeine.tv/Jeff Cannata, you can follow me or just hang out with us on Wednesdays at 4 p.m. and watch that. Also, I do a video game show called DLC, which you can find at 5by5.tv/DLC. That's general video games. It's a show I'm proud of. And I do the Slash Filmcast at slashfilmcast.com, talking about movies and TV. And I do a comedy show called We Have Concerns, which you can find at wehaveconcerns.com. And lastly, I'll mention one more time, if you're going to be at PAX East, please show up at the Heroes of the Storm panel, which is on Thursday. I think it's at 11 a.m. I'd have to double check that, but it's on Thursday. And it's going to be big. I think it's going to be awesome. I would love to see Into the Nexus fans there. If you show up, please hang around afterwards. I'd love to say hi and meet you. All right, that was a lot, but I appreciate you letting me say all of it.
Yeah, man, go for it. Folks, I'm Garrett Art on Twitter. All of the podcasts that I do can be found at amove.tv. Embrace the Spoilers is back for this month. We just did Tomb Raider. It was okay.
I also thought it was okay. People said it was bad. I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was fine.
I thought it was right down the middle. I thought the beginning was really good, and I thought the back half was not great.
I don't know. I like the twist at the end.
There was a twist at the end?
Well, you know, the not twist, but the explanation. I thought the explanation was kind of clever. Okay, we'll disagree on that, I guess.
I have thoughts. And you should listen to Embrace the Spoilers, I guess, to check that out. We'll be doing Pacific Rim 2 next week. We'll be doing Ready Player One the week after that. I'm actually really...
Summer's here, man.
Summer is here. It has arrived, even though I live in Florida. It is currently 60 degrees outside. What is going on? My first beach trip is like the last weekend in March most years. What the hell, Earth?
Wow. Topsy-turvy.
Yeah. Although I'm not complaining. I did made a new fire pit, so I get to use it. Yay. No one cares about that. Anyways, amove.tv for all the podcasts. Check out Embrace the Spoilers. Check out my solo show, which I have rebranded from The Angry Nerd. It is now called R2-T2 because I always have to remind you to spell Garrett with two R's and two T's. So there you
love
go.
It.
Go listen to that. I got an episode up from last week where I talk about the changes to Battlefront 2 and how I am surprisingly passionate about PUBG suddenly. And this week, I'm bringing on a very good friend that I've never podcasted with before to debate Ready Player One. He doesn't like it. I was ready to hate it, ended up loving the book, and I'm really excited for the movie. So we're going to have a little Ready Player One debate. So tune into that.
So you're going to be ready for Ready Player One.
I am ready for Ready Player One. Exactly.
Good.
Exactly. Awesome. So check that out. R2-T2, wherever podcasts can be found. That's going to wrap it up for Into the Nexus this week. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Mr. Kyle Ferguson and his majestic hair, which will probably be a little sun bleach because he spent some time in Florida. But until then, good luck and have fun.
Stay positive. Don't die.